Hello, and welcome to the new season of This Is What Democracy Looks Like In, hosted by me, Mary Layton. In this and the next episode, we are going to be talking about South Korea. That is a country that made the transition from autocratic rule to democracy in 1997, so much more recently than some of the other countries we've been talking about up until now. Now, if you're a new listener to this podcast, firstly, thank you. Welcome. I hope you enjoy it. Secondly, I do recommend that you listen to the episodes in order, which means going back to the beginning of season one and starting with the UK, but you don't have to by any means. Some things will make more sense if you're following along in order, but you know, you don't have to. You should also know that I cut a single interview into two or sometimes three episodes. So if you're only interested in one country, just make sure you're starting with part one rather than joining the interview halfway through. Okay, and that's enough of the boring introductions. Let's get on with learning what democracy looks like in South Korea. And I start this episode by asking my guests to introduce themselves, but these two guests are actually going to be anonymous, so they are going to describe themselves as they would like to be known to you.
Hi, I'm Kim. This is my Starbucks name that would be probably most common for a lot of Koreans because we have a lot of Kims there. Funny story, if you go to Starbucks in a place with a lot of Koreans in the States and you call out Kim, there will be five people trying to grab the same drink. I am a female person born in the 90s. Mm-hmm. So that would make me what's called an MZ generation, which is something that I think a lot of people would disagree with. It's a terrible way to label people, I think. I am from the southeast part of South Korea, more specifically Busan, which is the second largest city, but also known for its conservative politics.
Interesting.
Those would be the things that I think a lot of Koreans would immediately recognize. I have been educated in higher education, and I also did my college in Seoul. Mm-hmm. And this is an additional thing for, I guess, a largely U.S. audience, but I've been in the States for about over 10 years now. I've lived in Chicago for about 10 years, and now I'm living in Texas, which gave me a whole learning lesson in terms of the American politics. So absolutely. that would be my spiel. Yes.
Excellent. Yeah. And when you say MZ, I'm really curious, what does that mean?
So basically, in the States, there's the whole idea of millennial and mm-hmm. then Gen Z. Mm-hmm. So in South Korea, they put it together and call it MZ generation, which a lot of people think it as very problematic because it's basically lumping a very large group of people together who might not share anything. Mm-hmm. And I think a common criticism is that older generation, the more established generation, wants to just see the young people in a lump, younger people in the lump. Yes.
Oh, that's super interesting. Yeah, awesome. Thank you. Zeno, please introduce yourself.
Hi, I'm Zeno. I'm currently a PhD student in a private university in the United States. Mm-hmm. I've been staying in the States for actually 5 years because I escaped from the United States for 3 years. Mm-hmm. And I was staying in Korea back then, and I studied social science. Mm-hmm. And I think my choice of Zeno for the name for today's talk will kind of show my personal preference or personality. A little protection, since the democracy in Korea, it's systemically democratic, mm-hmm. but I have seen a lot of personal hurdles to navigate through this.
Absolutely.
So, going back to my personal origin, both of my parents were born in Seoul and I was mm-hmm. born in Seoul. So I think my parents were raised as kind of urban middle class in the mm-hmm. 1960s and 70s. Mm-hmm. And I personally think my social class belongs to upper middle class. Mm-hmm. It's based on my father's achievement, mm-hmm. based on his academic credentials. Both of my parents had engineering background, so mm-hmm. but I personally kind of distanced myself from those engineering, so now I'm in social science. Right. And my personal political belief is quite, I don't find mine as average because I'm a member of the Justice Party in Korea, mm-hmm. which only has about 15,000 people
okay
as a member, and this kind of belief has grown since my teenage period, but
Okay.
it has gone through several hurdles that I previously mentioned.
Hmm.
So today, I think I won't represent any of the average Korean who was born in late 1980s as a cis male, but I think it's gonna be a fun to talk with Mary and Kim. Thank
Awesome.
you.
Thank you. Okay, so one of the things I always like to ask to sort of ground us, we're talking in February 2024, is there any big event that's coming up, like a big election that is going to overshadow our conversation?
So there is a big election coming up in April. Please correct me, Zeno, if I'm wrong. So in South Korea, there are two major elections. One is the presidential election, and the other one is the election for national parliamentary members. I mean, there are also other smaller elections, but these are the major ones, and we have that coming up this April.
Okay, great. So that's a good like kind of segue actually into let's kind of establish what the basic organization is. So you have a president rather than a prime minister. President, I think I saw, is elected for 1 5-year term. Is that correct? Is that a good thing to just have one term?
I don't find it as a good thing. So this one-term presidency has caused a lot of problems, and which I find the most problematic is like the president is still understood as a kind of king with
Interesting.
5 years of tenure. So
Right.
he has so much power, but it's very short-handed. So it
Right.
has been polarized in the past decades after the democratization in 1987. So there has been some requests or some opinions to change this system to follow something like the American model, like where the president can run for several times, or the European model, like the ruling party appoints its own minister who's going to be in charge of this, but it can be changed. But this kind of reformation has always been issued, but it hasn't been any in action yet.
I agree with Zeno that there has been some concerns and debates around whether to keep this one-time 5-year term. But it does have a historical context to why this was made this way. So in the 70s, especially, South Korea went under authoritarian dictatorship. So there was some several changes in the constitution in which the President Park at the time basically made himself a lifetime president. So after that ended, there were some changes additionally made in constitution to make sure that we won't have another dictator going beyond, a certain amount of time. So as far as I remember from my, I don't know, elementary, middle school education, this is why the tenure has been set as one time only and no second round. But I think as Zeno mentioned, there is a concern around, the issue of, for instance, lame duck. You can't really have a very long term vision about, certain kind of policies, for instance. So there has been conversation, but it's a very sticky one.
I'm sure, It seems to make sense to say that someone can only serve for a certain amount of time. Like in the UK, for instance, you don't vote for a president, you vote for a party. But it sounds like what you're saying, especially what you said, Zeno, is that you vote for one person and you're really voting for the person, not the party, and they become like a mini king for 5 years.
Yes.
That's really interesting. So in terms of, you said that you vote on one round for the president, and then you vote for the members of the house. What is it called? Is it like a chamber? Is it like a house?
Called National Assembly.
The National Assembly. Yeah. So what, how does that consist? Do you have one chamber? Do you have two chambers?
Well, there's only one group, one chamber, and it's composed of if I remember correctly, it's composed of 300 members. So it's basically based on two systems to fill the 300 seats. So most of the seats, I do not know about the exact number, but most of the seats are based on the voting for your person who can represent your locality. For example, like within Seoul, its capital, like there are probably about mostly, I guess, 100. So you're gonna vote for who's gonna represent your district. And it happens to other locality like cities or towns as well. All over the nation, it's gonna be about probably 200 something. And also you can vote for party as well. So the remaining seats are allocated based on the voting ratio of the each party. But the system has been changed a lot in the past years, and since the general election, the National Assembly election is coming month, the system is still in debate.
When you're voting, do you feel people vote based on, I want to vote for this party, or do they feel like, I like this candidate and I want this person to represent me? Kim, I can see you laughing as I'm saying this.
Yeah, I take a stab at it. I think it really depends on where you are placed at. So I feel free to correct me. This is just my impression.
No,
So
sure, yeah.
I am registered at in a very conservative area of a city in Southeast. So in my area, I think a lot of people usually vote for the party when they do the district voting thing. So fun fact, this was not the National Assembly one, but it was, I think, a local assembly election that we had. We had a candidate who passed away, but then somehow his name didn't got removed in time. It appeared on ballot. People voted for him even though he was dead because he was the right party, right? So this was a crazy stuff. So in some places, I think party probably matters more to people. Whereas I feel like my city is a big city, so sometimes we do have those star politicians as well. And especially in important cities like Seoul, there will be a lot of very famous people campaigning for their election. In those cases, I think there are some considerations for who the person is. You might go for that person, you might not vote for that person. So that would be sort of my understanding of how people make decisions. So it could vary widely depending on where you are at and who the party decides to go out to do the campaign.
Interesting, yeah. Well, how many political parties are there? Is it as like in the US when there's just like two and basically you have a choice of A or B?
We have some, but it's in fact in general it's more like two party system. Ruling party and the opposition party, they eat up most of those seats, and there's a few remaining seats for the minority fringe parties,
Okay, so there aren't,
including
including your party, yeah. So there are some other parties that get
and
seats.
I as here, I've been thinking a lot about this lately. So yes, there is a ruling party and an oppositional party, which roughly would correspond to, say, the Democrats and the Republicans in the states. But here's the catch. So they change names really often, where I sometimes just lose track of, like, I forget, like, okay, which party was this? So but then you kind of know how it plays out, but then they just change names very often. As more recent years, there has been a lot of this what's called satellite parties. So they are parties. I'm probably being really mean here. I think it's more observed more often the case in the Conservative Party, where some of the politicians who want to be part of the larger Conservative Party, some maybe they're not strong enough, maybe they don't have enough support, so they create satellite parties, basically making arguments that pretty much align or even become more extreme in their own ways
Interesting.
to the major party. And then if they actually individual politicians manage to get themselves way back into the major party, then the satellite party dissolves. That happens a lot, I think, with the more conservative arm of the politics. I don't know a whole lot about the more liberal arm because I think they pan out a little differently. There are smaller parties, there are smaller coalitions, but I have a sense that there are deeper sort of ideological or perhaps differences in political views. So for instance, I cannot see myself as Green Party going hands in hand with the larger more liberal party in certain cases. I cannot see the individual candidates just casually relocating themselves to the larger party unless
Yeah.
there's like some serious issues. So I think it just works out differently based on what kind of politics that you're engaging with. But that's just my take. And maybe Zeno has a more to say about this because you mentioned that you're a Justice Party and that is considered a sort of a third party. That's
Yeah,
not the
yeah.
major party.
Well, I just want to say as well, I find that really interesting because it kind of suggests that's a way that disagreements within a party are able to manifest, right? One of the things I always find really strange and disturbing about the US, particularly looking at the Republican Party, is there's no real space for disagreement. Like everybody has to always vote in one way, everyone has to always vote in the other way. And there, it doesn't seem like it seems like if there is disagreement within the party, they, what you're saying is they will form a satellite party. They will work it out that kind of way, and if they agree, they'll come back again, kind of thing.
I
Is that
no, I
right? No,
think
I'm
it's
wrong.
not
Okay.
about, I don't think it's about, I mean, sometimes it is about disagreement, but
Or
I think
schisms.
it's more about power grabs and schism for
Okay,
sure, at least
yeah.
as far as the conservative party go. I mean, that's how I view it. I'm not a member of any of the parties, political parties, but that's how I understand some
Okay.
of the satellite parties that I see.
Yeah, I would like to add more context to Kim's explanation. So, the previous general election, the National Assembly election, happened in 2020. So, before that election, the parties in the parliament made a settlement about these, like the representation system in the national parliament election, except the current ruling party. Its name is People Power Party, but they are conservative and authoritarian, I would say. Anyway, so these parties made a system, like the settlement was about we should build a new system which can represent the overall support for the parties, especially for the fringe parties. For example, my party like scored about 9.7% out of 100 in 2020 general election. According to them, let's say these 100 seats are allocated for this representation system out of 300. So it should have been like 9 or 10 seats for the Justice Party. But after this settlement, the People Power Party, they said we're gonna make a satellite party to eat up within these 100. Because without this kind of thing, we're gonna give a lot of seats to the Democratic Party. The Democratic Party followed this suit. So as a result, there were several like fringe parties like which made alignment with these two major parties. And as a result, the Democratic Party won the whole general election with 180 seats.
So
Like
it's
my party, Justice Party, which scored 9.7, only got 6 seats in total from out of 300.
So is it almost like pretending you're having coalition politics by saying, oh, actually, we're forming a coalition with all these satellite parties, but really you're just pretending to have lots of different, like breaking yourself up into lots of different groups to take advantage of about rules about how you assign seats within the. Okay, that seems very devious. So you've mentioned you guys have a constitution. It sounds like the constitution is something that can change, right? How is that seen? Is it seen as something that changes regularly, that is pretty malleable?
I'd say it's actually a pretty big deal to change the constitution. It has changed a lot in the past, but it's because South Korea had a very tumultuous political times. So I think it is generally educated that constitution is something less malleable, and it should be something that's more stable. But it's also an option. It's not like the US where you're trying to refer to some really ancient text as something that cannot be altered. I think there is a bit of an open channel to thinking about what can be changed in the constitution. I mean, certain things obviously people will not agree. We have had a lot of debates around also the changing of preamble to constitution,
Interesting.
whether to recognize some of the more recent past events such as the Gwangju uprising in 1980s, whether to include that or not, and how to word certain things. So there has been an ongoing debate about what elements of the constitution should be changed, and I think it all has to do with the agreement that constitution is something that should be upheld seriously. We actually, in protest, we even have songs that quote the first article of the Constitution, and it's very widely sung. So I'd imagine most people, young people who grew up during, with a lot of protests, probably even know some of the lines without
Interesting.
even having to like exercise their memory muscle.
So it sounds like it's a document that's considered it's changeable, it's malleable, but it's not something you do lightly. It's something that has to be extremely
Yeah,
significant.
I want to add more context to this. So the current system is the Sixth Republic since 1987, and after the democratization. So there has been some requests to change the constitution in the late 1920s and early 2010s among the Democrats and the liberals, that we should change our constitution to reflect the social changes. And the meaning of constitution still matters to these liberals and Democrats, because the candlelight vigils or some protests from civil society, like the main theme of these protests always goes back. We should go back to our constitution. This is our first principle from the constitution. So this is kind of
Exactly.
working as a kind of civil religion among the citizens to reflect on and to take action.
Interesting. It's kind of fascinating to me, coming from the UK originally, where we don't have a constitution, to see all the different people I've been talking to who are in countries that do, particularly countries that have survived dictatorships and come out the other side and have had several rounds of rewriting their constitution, to think of it as like, on the one hand, it is a really important thing to a very powerful thing to say we are making a reset. We are saying what are our fundamental principles that we want to found the country on. But on the other, like, how often do you change that? Like, if society is constantly changing, are you going to re-update it every 10 years? Like, if you're constantly updating it, does that make it meaningless? Like, what is the con? Like, how do you balance continuity with change? It becomes this really kind of philosophical question in many ways.
I think one thing to maybe contrast with the US is that South Korea is a relatively young democracy. So there is a recognition that these constitutions and whatever that have been put out as something that the society agrees with, there's an idea that, these are all arbitrary. I mean, these are, I wouldn't, I think arbitrary is the wrong word. I say this is a work of, it is a labor that people have put together. So I think there is a fresher memory that this is something that you cannot just take for granted. I think that's something to be thought of. And of course, South Korea has its own, geopolitics unfolding in the region as well, such as, for example, there is North Korea on the northern side, there's China, People's Republic of China on the west, there's also Japan, and then, the other countries around US present is also the US have army bases in South Korea. So, in some way, constitution, I think, also gets folded into, how do you imagine what counts as sort of the valid political system.
So my understanding with the Korean constitution is like it's always the main focus is about the leadership of the nation, like who's gonna be the leader and how's gonna be the leadership formulated. So I think it follows European model, especially the French system. For example, like
Interesting.
as Kim previously mentioned, like under the Park Chung-hee authoritarian dictatorship, there were several constitution changes to legitimize his lifelong presidency. So I think the next constitution change might be again with the like how we're gonna change the terms of the presidency, or will we go to some like prime minister system or whatever it is.
I like the idea that you're implying there, Kim, that because it's in such recent memory, it's still you're more aware of the fact that it's created by people, in a sense. It's created for a reason within a context rather than becoming like an almost religious artifact.
I also want to I just want to also want to add that in the judiciary system, so I agree with Gino that South Korean system, some of it actually comes a lot from Europe. So we do
Interesting.
have a constitutional court that works differently from the normal court system, but then in people, a lot of people's minds, I think constitutional court is often imagined as something that's above the what's the equivalent as Supreme Court. I mean, I don't think we call it Supreme Court, but so we do have a separate court that determines that makes decisions on something of a constitutional matter, such as, for example, I think the biggest one was impeachment of a president. That was a decision made through the constitutional court. So it just works a little differently. The notion of constitution perhaps is something that's evoked. I don't know if it's more frequent, but it's just it has its own also an area of politics as well.
Fascinating. Well, I want to take a little bit of a change of direction and think a bit about voting itself, because I'm absolutely fascinated by how people actually vote, like the nuts and bolts of it all around the world. It's kind of fascinating to me. So if we can think about like just the basics of like who is able to vote? Is voting compulsory? Is it easy or hard to vote? Are you able to vote when you're abroad, or do you have to only be there?
So, in my understanding, voting is compulsory and every adult
Compulsory,
can
okay.
vote, and it's getting easier to vote. So, I started voting from probably around since like late 2000s. So, in the past 10 or 15 years, like I think voting is getting easier and easier. And this kind of system change affects the overall voting rate as well. For example, like
Interesting.
there's a, I do not know the exact name for this, but there's a system that you can vote prior to the election day. The Democratic Party is gonna win because the young people will gonna vote more because this prior voting system is kind of helping these people who is living outside of their home can vote for their homes, including the those in
Interesting.
abroad like me and Kim.
Can I actually add? So I think there might be a misunderstanding when Zeno said compulsory. So it's not that you won't be penalized for not voting. I know
Okay.
that in some places like Singapore, you will be penalized for not voting. But it is highly recommended that you vote. I mean, it's part of your education. And in fact, for the two large major elections, one presidential election and the National Assembly election, the other one, the voting day itself is declared as a national holiday. So to make sure that more people can go vote instead of, toiling away in their workplaces. And Zina also mentioned about the, I don't also know the term, we call it something like voting in advance, prior vote, whatever. So I used to do that all the time because I was registered in the in my hometown district, but then I was living in Seoul when I was able to vote. So what happens is that unlike the US where you have to register in advance to vote, the voting committee actually already has your name under if you are a resident there, of a citizen. So I just alert them, I want to maybe vote in advance. I can also just show up in any voting polls, like
Oh, okay.
in and then just hand in my ID and I can just like vote on the spot. Similarly with the voting abroad, I've been voting abroad. I've been because I've been living in the States for 10 years, I've been voting this one I do have to register with the Ministry of Foreign Affairs in advance. So I already done that actually. I hope you did it too, Zeno. And then you go and then you vote. And usually this voting period lasts longer. It's not just one day thing. Usually it lasts for about a week. I've seen that here in Texas, it's like in Houston, it's something like 2 weeks. So usually there's ample time given. And I think this is also important because we have conscription, mandatory conscription for male. They cannot leave their posts just to vote, right? So a lot of the voting takes place within their barracks and stuff. So there's a lot of sort of intricacy in terms of how votings are actually done and what days they're done. But in general, I agree with Zeno that I think there's a lot of effort to make voting more accessible, for better or for worse, in all sorts of ways.
So it sounds like you're already registered, right? So you don't have to go and register yourself, like it's preemptively you're registered. You can vote ahead of time. You can vote in any location, it sounds like. You don't have to go
So
back to one place.
can I
So
think so?
go
I
ahead.
like the term advanced voting. So during the advanced voting period, you can vote anywhere. But on the election date, you have to go back to your district where you are registered.
And presumably that would be a particular place in your district, like go to this school, go to this place. Yeah. And the day of the election itself is a holiday, so everything is closed. It's like
Legally, yes.
legally, yes. So tell me about
In
that. What
accordance
actually
with
happens on
like
election day?
other national holidays, like the Korean version of Thanksgiving, something like that. So the voting takes place from 9 a.m. to 6 p.m.
I thought the voting happens much earlier, no? Like
Oh, it
I thought
starts
it's
from
like
6 a.m.
it
again.
starts earlier
That's
in the
correct.
morning.
Oh,
Yeah,
okay.
I think it's 6 a.m. because we have all this news about how really old voters would line up in front of the this booth like from 5:30 a.m. or something like that.
Yeah, I want to share my story and I was surprised. So
Please.
it was like around 2010, and I was living in Gangnam, the region of Gangnam Style. So it is known as the locality voting for the conservative parties. And that day, I was a college student, and I had to go to my college after voting. So I woke up like 6 or 6:30 and went to the local school to vote. And there was a huge, huge long line of elderly waiting to vote. Then I could get into voting and went to my college. But it was really surprising that I've heard that these elderly people are very passionate with voting. And it's true, at least early.
And they want to do it early
Oh,
in the
yeah. And
morning.
it's a little bit segue, but I want to add one more important election in Korean system. So Kim mentioned about the presidential election and the National Assembly election, and local election is also considered as one of the most important ones. Like for example, electing the mayor of Seoul or something like that, because it's the national level, so it kind of supports the parliamentary system.
And is that are each of those elections national holidays? Are they all considered as important?
Wait, is the local one also
It
national
is.
holiday?
It is.
I forget those things.
Oh, interesting. So, I mean, the impression I'm getting is it's voting is taken very seriously, and every effort is made to make it easy for people to vote. When the old people are lining up, is there a fear that you might not get to vote in time, that they might not, or they're just very eager?
I mean, I think that concern probably is more for the younger people who might have to work on those national holidays. Because I mean, it is national holiday. Yes, a lot of companies will comply with that. But your convenience store will still be running. Your pharmacy might be still running. Smaller companies probably will make you come to work.
Interesting.
Yeah, no, but maybe it's the passion. It's hard to tell. I have no clue.
I'm not sure about the exact statistics, like of how many are they working in the election day, but starting from the election rate, like voting rate. So for the presidential election, it's about around 70%, and for other elections, it's usually around 60%. So people, yeah.
That's pretty
So I
high
think
then,
social
yeah.
pressure. that people understand voting is kind of basic part of citizenship. I think that kind of social pressure is important to understand this one. But people like the media interprets the remaining 30 or 40% of who don't vote as kind of they're working or they're doing something, as Kim mentioned.
So that the people who don't vote are interpreted as being obstructed by their work rather than a narrative of they're lazy, they're apathetic, this kind of thing.
That also happens. I mean, there will be people saying, oh, younger people, you know,
Don't
they should
care.
probably vote, but they don't care. But I think there is a little bit more enthusiasm about voting and maybe more social pressure about voting than, say, US. But yeah, I think there is a sort of a general social pressure and the recognition that you should probably vote.
So talk me through what the process is. Is it you turn up at a particular place, right? Is it electronic voting? Is it by paper?
Yeah, it goes by paper. So when you show up, you should show your ID card to person who's in charge of the voting place, and the person's gonna check the name with the printed register. And then the person will give you the paper, ballot paper to vote, and you vote in secret and you put it into the box. And you can take some selfies, like to show that you voted. That's the usual
Yeah,
system.
that's it. So
I
then,
want
go
to
ahead.
add that. So it works a little differently for the advanced voting, because you the person sitting there will not have the full role of every citizen in South Korea. So what happens is that you show up, you hand in your ID, and there's some computer system that somehow automatically prints out the right ballot for
Oh,
you,
wow.
depending on where you are. And then you take them in, and you go into that little booth, you know, has all the curtains and whatever around. And in there will be a little stamp, this red stamp, where you put the right mark on. So it's not electronic at all. You have to make the right stamp. And then you put it in this envelope that's provided. And then you seal it, and then you put it inside the ballot box. So this is for the advanced voting, where envelope will also have a corresponding voting committee's address that will go back to your district, for instance, if it's a national assembly. I think it's also the case for presidential. It's like all based on, you know, district kind of counting stuff. So that's what happens when it's advanced voting.
So this is my next question, like how the counting works. So if all of these advance votes are then literally being mailed back to the district where the person lives, so then when do they get opened? Who does the counting?
So I think they probably will get lumped into the
The same
votings
day.
the same. That would be my guess, but I might be very, very wrong. But they are counted by hand, you know, several rounds. There will be people monitoring. There are members of the, I don't know what they're called, something voting, something committee in each district. And there will be also observers, volunteer observers, watching it over.
How do you become part of that counting committee? Who are they?
So every election is under the control of National Election Commission, and they hire some part-timers to monitor the counting on the election day. So on election day, by 6 p.m., every vote finishes. Then there is some delivery or some kind of counting system before counting the vote to check whether we have gathered all the votes for this district or not. So usually the counting starts from like 8 or 9 p.m., and the mainstream media always broadcasts these kind of countings to show like who's winning now, who's winning now.
Do they
It's
show
like
like
the
the room?
it's like a sports game. I actually have a friend who's a journalist who's been on those election program. And he said at some point, you know, so all the major broadcasting companies and newspaper companies, they do the exit poll. So they have pretty good sense of, you know, like what results will be when certain numbers, you know, when counting reaches a certain number. But then my friend was telling me in the last election, it was like a pretty obvious result to some extent. No, not the last one, but maybe the one before it was relatively more obvious. But then this these broadcasting companies need to profit. They want the more viewership. So even though he said they knew the result, but they would try to hold it off by making it more like sports, where like, oh, we still don't know. Maybe there might be an overturn in that district. So there's the whole weird excitement, and they also the different co media, like the broadcasting companies, they compete with who has the funnier sort of show in some sense. They do all this interesting graphic like animations of these candidates and all this thing. So
Fantastic.
it's quite exciting to watch it.
Awesome, yeah. So you have the votes being counted and they have observers, and it sounds like they're hired people. Do people trust this system? I guess this is my question. Because to me it's really interesting, like, do people tend to, with a paper system, you can literally see it, right? There is a piece of paper in front of you, like it makes a lot of sense to people. Here is a piece of paper, the piece of paper goes in the box goes here, a person counts a piece of paper. Like, you can see the process the whole time, as opposed to a machine, electronic voting, where it's all kind of hidden inside a black box. How do people feel about the safety of this system?
I have never been in the counting place, so I'm not sure. But my understanding is, like, in one counting place, there will be several observers from each party to observe the counting system. So it kind of prohibits the kind of manipulation of the voting, the counting. At least since the 2000s. Probably, I think this kind of system has established in the current constitution, probably after the democratization. Because before the democratization, this voting has a lot of problems. But nowadays, there are some
Interesting.
conspiracies about these countings. But still, I think probably there hasn't been any big scandal about this counting system.
Likewise, I agree. I think, and compared to especially the US, there is a little more trust put toward how their votes are being counted. And also, it's like not that hard to volunteer yourself to be present at these voting offices. I mean,
Interesting.
another thing, I think one thing to notice that South Korea is in terms of area space, is more condensed. It's like much smaller country, so I can just walk over to the office easily if you're living in a city, right? To just go and watch, so it's not a huge deal. And also, I agree with Zeno that it's likely that this system has been put in place more recently because we do have a specific term called gym election, or gym election, is that the right term? Gym voting, where during the authoritarian period and all that, people were forced into the gym, and it wasn't like really a secret sort of voting. You kind of know who you had to vote for. And those terms do get evoked sometimes now and then, so you can see that the history of the authoritarian past is definitely haunting a lot of people. Having said that, there has been more recent scandals of, or in conspiracy theories around, oh, votes are being rigged and stuff like that. But I would say at a smaller scale, and it's sad that I think some of the more extreme right-wing media and politicians are kind of trying to hype up that theory. But I think the more general sense is that that's BS.
It's like it's a conspiracy theory that's kind of fringe rather than an actual sense that something is untrustworthy.
But I mean, there is a role that conspiracy theory play, and I think it does have an increasing role that it plays in the Korean politics at the moment. And I mean, I think they are not unrelated with the ways in which the conspiracy theories are being brewed in state places like the States. But it has not taken up to a scale of which we see in the US, for instance.
So we're going to take a break here. We will be back for the second half of this conversation in the next episode. There we will be talking about things like gender, corruption, social media, and what South Korean voters think about things like their politicians engaging in political acts like hunger strikes. So if you enjoyed this episode, you can subscribe to the podcast, share it, or even support us by going to the website, www.democracyinpodcast.com. Please share it with your friends. Come back, listen to more. Listen to the previous episodes as well. And tell everyone you know who cares about democracy they should listen to this podcast. Thanks. See you next time.